I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
Okay, so I want to start by asking you the question that I'm sure is on everyone's minds when they talk to you. And maybe you've been asked it before, but I really want to know, which one of the bears is you?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, the bears are all originally just kind of slices of the creator, Daniel. Sure. And so I guess in terms of which ones I identify with the most, I don't know. I always feel like everyone just kind of wishes they were Ice Bear, but they're all just a bunch of pandas. Panda's actually the easiest one to write for.
Yeah.
Because he's just so very flawed. And it's very easy to exploit that. But which one's me? I don't know. I think it just... I think they're designed to be, like, any part of you, so it's really hard for me to really say one.
All
Sorry
right,
for
I'll
this
let
terrible
it go.
Answer. I can't pick one.
No, I appreciate
I guess
it.
Potentially, yeah, I don't know.
I wasn't sure. I thought maybe you'd be like, ugh, this question again.
No, I don't think I've ever really gotten that question.
Oh, fun. Well, the... I really think it is ridiculous that I happened upon meeting you and that you were, like, able to talk to me on the podcast, because the show has literally helped me through, like, all of the parenting. Like, my baby's just wandering around, but when the show goes on, he's, like, totally chill, and he just sits quietly and he watches. And it's like no other shows really chill him out with such fortitude.
I'm glad it's an immersive experience for him.
Yeah. No, he's into it. He also thinks he's Ice Bear, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah. The kids love the Ice Bear.
They really do. It's interesting. So how do you... You were talking about the characters that they're... Panda is most easily to identify with and easily to write for. When you write a script for the shows, are you focused on a particular character? Like, are there multiple people working on developing a story and you're like, I'll develop this thread and you'll develop that thread? Or do you do it all at once?
It's very collaborative, the whole process. When we break a story, we do it as a group between myself, my co-writer, our directors, and Daniel, the creator. And we all pretty much work on the same story together, and usually the hope is we can break a few at the same time, so when we feel like we're good at this one stage for one, we can hop and try to do it the same with another. But we are all usually try to stay on the same page when we work on just one story.
So are you guys building to a specific format? Like, it's a short... The episodes are short, and there's also short films as well. What's the, like, story structure? Like, and I know that that's a super nerdy question, so...
No, not at all. Even though, yeah, it is an 11-minute show, but we still approach every story with just three acts in mind, just making sure we have, you know, your act one and your act two and your climactic fun act three that resolves everything that came before. Even though it's just 11 minutes, we still manage to hit all of those points, because that's... And they're usually... We used to be very strict about them, but at the same time, it's always sort of more of a jumping off point. Sometimes we thought that's not quite what we usually do, but that's what feels right for this story. So we usually just start with three acts and just whatever feels right from there is where we go.
Totally. How many years have you been doing this now?
I have been doing this for almost 4 years. I think next month it'll be 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
wild.
It's been a while.
yeah.
Long crept up on me.
Totally. But it's cool to have like a regular job in like, mm-hmm. you know, creative field, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, totally. It's cool that the writer's situation is a collaborative thing. Do you know about other, I mean, I'm not going to say like, tell me about a writer's room that's not so collaborative. But what I was going to say was, you know, I know that there's different kinds of writer's rooms. Do you know people that work in other ones?
Yeah, I know a bunch of other writers, and I've heard a lot about other kind of writer's rooms for kind of most TV shows. It's usually pretty collaborative where someone's leading the room and all the writers are helping break the story, and then someone drafts it, but then they all edit as a group, and there's usually some version of that. So no matter whose line is under the written by credit, you can guess that everyone's hands has been on it. And if it's a good room, that's a good thing, and everyone likes that.
Yeah, right on.
For animation, it becomes a little different. For our show, it's just me and another full-time writer, and we break stories with our directors and Daniel, so that feels like our writer's room, because it's us as a group kind of talking about the story and what works for the story. And then we go off and write it in an outline form, and then it gets handed off to the board artists who board it, and they kind of flesh it out even more from there. And it just with each stage, more people are putting their touch on it, which is just another version of how collaborative it can be. And then, you know, we'll take a look and give notes or give our thoughts. And I'm very thankful it's like that, because I have heard... I won't name names, but I've heard, you know, there might be a show out there where there isn't much intermingling between the artists or the writers, or the writers just kind of write and then it gets edited from there and they never see it again. But every show is different. So the way we do it, it became that because it works for us. And if another show does it a little differently and it works for them, then that's totally fine. It's every show has to find their process. Totally. So I'm very thankful for ours because I like it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally cool. Did you ever, when you were a little kid, did you want to be working on TV and movies?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I wanted to, I guess the goal always kind of changes here and there, but I always liked cartoons and I always wanted to work with cartoons. So when the opportunity came, it was sort of a real stroke of luck. Just kind of fall into what I wanted to do as a kid.
Yeah. Because you were always drawing?
Yeah, I always liked it. I got this job because I was just posting comics online. My comics, I guess just got the attention of a few people at the network, and from there I was just kind of freelancing for a little bit while the show was first getting off its feet, and
nice.
Eventually led to a full-time job. So just kind of drawing is what led me to this, which is a lot of people, similar stories, some people in animation.
Wow, that's pretty wild. That
yeah.
feels like too dreamy a story. Like, I feel like I should cut it out. Like, I don't want anyone to feel like that's a possibility. I'm like, no, this was a one time. This just happened one time.
I tell people all the time that that's always the road to go. Just put stuff online and someone might see it.
Well, sure. Sure, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess. Yeah, wild. What a fairy tale. That sounds fun.
It's great.
Yeah. When you were a little kid, were you performing and stuff too, or were you just setting up other things, or just or drawing? Did you always have comic strips?
As a kid, I was always drawing and drawing comics, and that was sort of my thing as a kid in school, and people knew me as funny, but I was actually very I was pretty shy, so I wasn't really performing, and it was something I really wanted to do, but I didn't even do it until well into college, when a lot of people kind of pushed me to do it.
Are you? Is this a sad story about how people pushed you to do it? Or
no, no, not sad. Not sad at all. It's actually what I needed. I always really liked stand-up, and especially the older I got into high school and college, I really wanted to do it, but was a real scaredy cat. And then luckily, some friends we had opportunities to just perform on in a campus environment, and some friends said you should do it, so I did it, and luckily I stuck with it.
Was that at college?
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Ithaca College.
Oh, Ithaca College. In Ithaca,
right.
New York?
In Ithaca, New York.
I was going to be really upset if it turned out that it wasn't actually in Ithaca and I was being old.
Yeah.
How was that? Was that a cool school? What'd you go for?
I went for television and radio with a concentration in video production.
Whoa, you really did?
Yeah, I really wanted to study TV, and then there was a writing concentration option, but I thought that I ironically thought that wouldn't go anywhere, and I needed some practical skills so I could get a job. So I studied video production, and then I did a lot of video production work after college, but eventually it led to the job I have now.
I could change the name of this podcast to Practical Skills. I can't tell you how many people tell me their story, and part of it is like, so at first I was a pre-med major. You're like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, now I work at the ballet. You're like, okay. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's pretty wild. What kind of video production stuff were you doing before you made it big?
I would do kind of production assistant things where, like, for a week or two, I'd just basically be an errand boy for certain productions.
Nice.
I worked I was a production assistant at WXXI, which is the PBS station where I'm from, Rochester, New York. And I did that for about a year before I moved to New York. And that was a great job because they kind of needed you to do just about anything because there's only so many people. And I kind of got to run cameras and help with graphics things. And once I even had to wear like an Elmo costume and go to the mall and hug kids.
Oh my God. That seems so that both was, terrible and lovely at the same time.
It was, I loved it because I kind of, they would help put on events and stuff, and it was just always really exciting because there was always something new and it was never boring.
Yeah.
And so that was a great job in video production. I loved that one. The
yeah,
rest
right on.
Were all huge headaches and made me want to not do this anymore because someone's always yelling at you and telling you to, you know, go grab bottled water for someone.
It's true. Somebody always needs bottled water. They
yeah,
should know it's not the video guy's job to get it, though.
Oh, if you're a PA, your job is to do whatever someone yells at you.
Oh, all right. All right, good
and
to
if that's
know.
To get bottled water. Yeah, if you meet a PA, tell them to get you some water.
Okay.
They'll do it.
I will. I will make sure to request all sorts of things. The next PA I see. Oh man, I actually I have a little baby right now, of course, as you know, because I've told you about my baby. But I was joking that when he turns 18, I was like, listen, when you turn 18, I'm gonna go and I'm going to LA and I'm gonna be a 55-year-old PA. And I'm just going to be like, hey, guys, how's it going? Can I get you some coffee? I can get some coffee. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of that for everybody.
Hey, they'll always need someone to get some coffee.
So I'm going to spend the next 18 years figuring out how to make the best coffee.
Well, maybe your kid can enter the field with you, and you can be a duo.
A duo? A PA duo?
Yeah,
imagine that for, like, a second. Like a mother-son PA duo. That would be terrible. I mean, hilarious
like a winning
and great.
Team.
We are not going to try to win Mother Boy, okay? That's not what's
going to happen. Okay, all right.
I'm trying really hard not to raise Buster.
Yeah.
That's my one hope.
Very important. Very important.
Oh, man. So you, when you were in college, you got all these other skills, and now you are mostly doing writing. Do you, how did you pick up the writing skills? Like, clearly you're good at it, right? So how do you, do you get from, nah, I won't take that writing class to, wow.
I think there were a few writing classes that I had to take, but I think anything I learned.
Shout out to the writing department of Ithaca College.
Yeah. I think anything I learned before my job now was just from absorbing and reading about how things were done, or just kind of learning on my own, or through practice of just making videos or drawing comics on my own. But really, I learned most just from starting at my job. You know, my first year there, I kind of had no idea what I was doing, and I was just like, how is this job done? And then you do it enough, you start to figure things out.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, man. Well, I mean, how do you keep the ideas flowing? Like, how do you keep them going in your head?
Well, luckily, I just work with a lot of creative and fun people, and I always say, you know, a 10-minute meeting with a bunch of people, you'll get more done than if you had a whole hour to yourself, because you need to bounce ideas off of people. And then the other thing is just the show just kind of, I think, in itself generates ideas, because if someone had a funny character that they threw in there, and then later we need an idea for an episode, we'll think, well, let's go back to that character and then see what their thing is. Or if, you know, just I think episodes will birth other episodes, essentially.
Yeah.
So sometimes we just like to look to the show and see what we can draw from what's already there. And then that'll just kind of elaborate and create more of a world for the show.
Yeah. Now, We Bear Bears isn't the first creative, show that you've put on. I did a little research, and I believe that there were some live shows that you put on back in the day. What kind of... were you producing comedy shows? Also, you do stand-up. Comedy shows that you've done.
Yeah, so I did stand-up in college, and we would just put on shows because, you know, you got to make space for yourself to perform. And so at both Ithaca and then just an hour and a half away in Rochester, my friends and I would just put on some shows, and some of them were just general, like we just booked a bunch of people to do their thing, and then a few were maybe more abstract, and we were just playing around trying to play with a concept, and or
in there, brother.
Yeah, we did all sorts of crazy stuff,
and that was during college.
It was during college, after college. I mean, it was pretty much up till now. I mean, I was in New York for a little bit, and then I moved to LA for Bears, and sometimes I'd go back and do something in New York or do something here.
Do you do stand up anymore right now?
I do, not as often as I used to. I used to do it a ton. I mean, that's the whole reason I moved to New York was specifically to do stand up.
Oh yeah.
And then I got this opportunity, and I followed up on that, and then kind of went more into writing.
So how long were you in New York? Like, for like a minute?
Not long. Yeah, for a very, like, maybe a little over a year.
Yeah.
And I was like just getting the hang of it and feeling like, all right, now I know how to live here. And then told, no, you gotta live in LA now.
Those are two very different places. And oh, you had to adjust to both different. Of them very quickly. How did that go?
It was a tough adjustment. I mean, I really love New York, and it's super fun to live there, especially when you're really young and you're stupid. But moved to LA, and I had this big boy job and kind of had to start living this big boy life. And LA is a bizarre city, but if you get to know it, it can actually be really cool.
I feel like this is the intro to a sitcom. I can like hear the music.
Yeah, so there were definitely a couple of years even when I was very disgruntled and would look at everything in a really negative lens. And I think maybe it's just either from being here longer or just getting a little older and shedding a few of those habits naturally. But I don't really feel that way anymore. I like this town.
Well, every it's town also a little bit easier to be more open and pleasant to a situation than it is to just be like, I hate everything. This is the worst. Sure. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder, you know, if the places, if I've had nice experiences or if I've just dealt with everything pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm all like, oh, that was a nice time. And then my husband will be like, no, it wasn't. We had this horrible thing happen. And I was like, right. Ah, it was fine.
Yeah. That happened.
Yeah, definitely. So when you're, you're still doing stand-up. Are you writing stuff or are you just going to open mics and kind of throwing stuff around?
This is stuff where I don't really have the answers. when I write jokes, my jokes are usually pretty silly and dumb. And when I go to open mics, it's usually just whatever dumb thought I thought might be good. And we'll just see what lasts or what I get sick of.
Do you actually do the whole process?
I don't even know if that even answers your question.
yeah, you're fine. Do you, do the process of, coming back to it and, keeping tabs on, how things went and changing things up bit by bit?
I think over the years, it's a pretty typical process of just writing a joke and being like, is this good? Something about it seems good enough. And then trying it out. And, you know, if it a handful of times, no reaction, I'll just say that's a dud. Or if it's a mixed reaction, it means something is there. But usually I might just get tired of it and get rid of it. I think
you
just want
those
winners.
Yeah. I like how you act like everyone is diligently working on their jokes. They're not. That's not everyone.
No. I mean, some people just go up there and just they riff until they find stuff, and that works. Same thing with the show I work on. You just gotta find your process and what works for you, which 100% won't work for someone else. But whatever works for you, you just got to find it. And some people, it takes a long time. I still think all the time, I'll try to write a joke and be like, how do I do this again? I feel like I don't really know.
Well, I find that sometimes you can get stuck in a structure, you know, because write sketch comedy. And so I'm writing in a very stiff structure, or not stiff, but a certain amount of minutes, a certain setup of a joke. And so when I go to write other kinds of comedy, it can be a little harder, you know what I mean? Cause you're kind of stuck in the flow of what you're doing. Maybe your brain's just three act structure all the time. Like you can't get away from
it. I think at work it's pretty easy to, I mean, luckily I'm not just on my own, and it's almost a little easier to write for the voice of something else. Than yourself. because the show had a voice when I started, and then everyone on the crew has helped turn it into something very distinct, and we all know it so well, so it's very easy to write something and think, this fits, this doesn't fit, this works, and also you and a whole team are deciding this together. But whenever I'm writing on my own, there's also this baggage of who am I and what is my voice, and because you're just with yourself. And I think it always helps to, you know, do it with a friend who can see your voice clearer than you can. But, you know, writing stand-up is can often be a very solitary activity.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the reason why I made the joke earlier about how not a lot of people do it the right way, as you discussed, is years ago, I lived in New York City, and I like to tell people that I did stand up there. But really, I stood on a stage with a microphone and talked to my friends. And I didn't really I didn't take any chances. I knew 100% of the audience. Like, there was no, you know, I was like, I didn't do well at stand up. I'm likable. That's it. Mm. I can't, you know, like, I didn't know how to do it. And so when I came to Austin and started teaching improv and sketch, people would be like, can you tell me about stand up? You did stand up, right? And I go, I'm not the person who's going to teach you how to write a joke and to hone this kind of thing. So when you're like, yeah, you know, you just do this, I'm like quickly taking notes, you know, what? That's how you do it? You know, oh, well, you know what I mean. But it's just a different, it's like a different style. It's like, you know, if you're writing for something longer, you have to develop a story in a different kind of way than if you're writing something super fast.
Yeah.
Have you ever taught other writers, like, since you've been in your current job? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, and perhaps I'm wrong, is this the only writing job you've had on an animated series?
I freelanced for another cartoon called Unikitty.
Oh,
the character from the Lego movie. She has a cartoon now. So I wrote a few of those, but aside from that, yeah, Bears is pretty much the only writing gig I've had.
Are you staying? Because you mentioned how your like goal in life was to work with cartoons. So do you think you'll stay writing in animated series?
I would prefer to. I mean, if a good opportunity came, I would never want to shake my head at it, but I love animation, and I kind of feel like that's where I should stay, because I like it so much.
When you're writing a script with animation in mind, you're not the person who's doing the animation, though, right? Like, you're not drawing anything.
No.
You're just coming up with the story, right?
Yeah, we're just coming up with the story. So when we break the story, we're outlining it. So for us, it's usually like a 3-page typed document that kind of just describes the beats of the stories and has examples of dialogue and jokes, and just kind of explains the purpose of each beat and chapter and all that. And then the storyboard artist has to draw everything. They have such a daunting task of having to make this outline actually come to life. And since they have to decide the acting of every character, they also are writing the dialogue.
Interesting. So then,
yeah,
is that standard in animation that it's set up in that way?
It's pretty standard for a lot. The term, it's board-driven, so that means that it's kind of, you're continue writing into each phase. So it's pretty common. I've seen shows where they script it and then board it and then move forward, but it's pretty common in kids' cartoons that you'll see this process. And I like it a lot because it gives us the time to have a hand in every story that we come up with. And then when the storyboards are done, we get to take a look and give thoughts or just add more jokes or answer any notes and see what comes from there. So I like it a lot because it just means we get to work on more episodes.
Is the reason why you prefer to work in animation because it is sort of like not bound by the physical rules of the world, or like...
Not really. I think because every cartoon has its own rules. You know, so many cartoons...
Yeah.
Even bears, the world of bears, despite the fact that there are talking bears, there's definite rules to how the world has to work. And I'm certain we could find a live-action show that is more absurd and could have more surrealist things than our show.
Yeah.
But I think I just like cartoons just because, I mean, I think it just comes down to I just like cartoons. I just love seeing people draw, and I love seeing visual gags that are drawn out, and I just really love attaching emotion and stories to something that is completely fabricated. So they're just drawings, but people care about that just as much as they would a person on a screen. So it's very fun. It's just very fun. That's why I like it, I think.
Yeah. Did you always want to work on things that were geared towards children?
I didn't think I had a clear preference. I really like that it's for kids. I think we think really hard about what we're putting out there, and that it's good, and it's perpetuates something positive and nice. And I think it's really important that anyone who works in children's animation or programming of any kind really thinks about what they're putting out there. So I'm glad I work on a show that holds that standard.
Huh. I'm glad you work on a show that does too.
Yeah. And even if I worked on a show for adults, I would hope to keep that same standard.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of adult animation, and they like to act like, you know, oh, any animation that's over 18 has to be racy. It's like, no, could I just watch a show about
that
some
is
people?
A very, yeah, there's certainly a desire that if it's a cartoon for adults, the whole point is to watch an animated character do something crude. And not to say, there's plenty of shows that do just that, and I love them. But,
sure, we all love them.
I'm always fascinated by people who just want their show to just be the best kind of show it can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, that's super interesting. I often wondered when I first started watching the show, because, you know, my baby is very young, so...
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really know what he's watching totally. So sometimes I slip in things that, you know, they're cartoons, but he probably shouldn't watch them. But it's kind of how I happened upon your show. I was like, oh, here's a cartoon I haven't seen before. Let's check it out. I wasn't sure at first if it was for kids, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah, you know, our show, I talk about this all the time at work, is our show is in this kind of strange... It's definitely for kids, you know, it's supposed to be whatever a kid can watch. But most cartoons for that age are about other kids, they're about animals. But our show is about animals who live among adults. So they basically function as adults. They might as well, you know, in so many stories, they might as well just be adult people. The only adult cartoons for kids are like superheroes. So our show's just about three guys who hang out. And so I think in terms of situations they get into, they might be something you would see in a sitcom. So I think that's why you might be getting that feeling where you're like, is this for kids? Because it's just about three, they are bears, but they are just like going to, you know, go by... iPods or something, you know, whatever. They're just they're just going to the mall, and that's the
whole
story.
It's like an episode of Perfect Strangers with a third guy.
Right. Yeah.
That's my perfect sitcom example. Sorry if that's a super weird example. It's perfect.
Not at all.
Though that being said,
I was just watching an episode of Perfect Strangers on YouTube last week.
You're lying. You're crazy.
No,
even if you're lying, keep lying. I like it.
I like to show off the intro. It's one of my favorite sitcom intros because
it's a good one.
It was during this phase in which sitcom intros had to have these very inspirational, pop ballad theme songs that were nearly 2 minutes long.
Yep.
That need to sell what the show is about, because
entirely,
who knows if any? Yeah, every week is nothing but new viewers, possibly millions and millions of people.
Who knows? They've never seen it before. What's the show about?
What's the show about? Well, it's about this guy Balky, and he comes from some unknown country to Chicago. And that's what I was watching was he. What did he do? He won the lottery.
Oh.
I didn't catch the rest of it. I gotta dive back in sometime. He won the lottery, and I'm certain the story was going to be that he lost the ticket.
Oh, I'm sure. And they searched the whole house for it.
And I'm certain, and I haven't seen the ending, but I put money on that because he says that those are the numbers I picked, but then he's like, "But where's my ticket?" And I was like, he didn't see the ticket, though. I bet the numbers were slightly different or something.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll read it
off. But he wouldn't care because he's a free spirit. And what's his cousin? I forget his name, but
Cousin Larry.
He's so tightly wound that he was very the lottery is dumb. Don't do this. And then, of course, proven wrong. And then he's going to go crazy looking for the ticket because now he's invested more so than his free-spirited cousin, and he's going to learn a lesson about money or something. I don't know.
He certainly is going to learn a lesson.
That's just my guess.
They are beautiful. If you watch it, it's honest to goodness. I asked you about your writing stuff. I've taught myself most things by watching television and taking notes.
Yeah. That's something I've done is what's a great thing to do is to just watch a pilot and just kind of jot down everything that happened in notes, and then you basically have the outline of their pilot, and you'll find they're all very much the same.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it becomes difficult sometimes, though, and tell me if this is something that happens to you. I, like I said, I write sketch comedy, so I have a hard time watching comedy, sitcom comedy or even SNL. I have a real tough time with that because I can, follow the pattern too quickly, and then I'm immediately I'm out of it because I'm, counting the beats, and I'm
you're
going to do this a third time.
I've had a few people say the same thing to me, and I think I feel the opposite, where when I know certain mechanics of it all or the way it should be done, it makes me kind of like it more, because if they do something really well or unexpected with it, I'm like, whoa, they turned that thing on its head, that thing that we always try to do or that thing that we are guilty of doing over and over, they did it so much better. Stuff like that, where I really like seeing what they did with the structure and all that.
Well, that's
and I mean,
great.
If it's
You're
really
learning,
good, I'll
growing.
Forget all about it. Yeah.
What'd you say?
Oh, if it's really good, I'll forget all about it and actually, watch the thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's the best. That's actually... you were talking earlier about how there certainly could be a live-action show that's more absurd than yours. And I was going to say that I believe the Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency is a show that is that kind of thing. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Are you talking about the new one or the old one?
The new one.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Like the one that's on BBC with Elijah Wood. Why, yeah, Tommy, do you hate Elijah Wood?
No. I don't like the guy who makes it.
Oh.
I think he's I've heard he's a bad person.
Oh.
Also, it bothered me that a Douglas Adams property was given to an American writer to lead.
You're like, we shouldn't even be able to touch it.
Not that so much, but I just didn't understand why they would go outside Douglas Adams' sensibility. You should try to find someone who has a body of work that might reflect his tone or philosophy, and they couldn't have picked a worse choice in my... I heard that, and I just thought, never mind.
Oh.
Never watch it. There was, however, a... not even that long ago, a Dirk Gently show that had a pilot and then three episodes, and it wasn't bad. I don't think it was really a hit. The pilot was good, and then the season was okay, but its last episode was actually, I thought, really nice and good, and actually kind of stood out on its own, and it's a shame that never went anywhere. I forget the actor's name, but it was the guy who is in the show Episodes, the English guy. I always forget the name. I think it's like Steven something. He starred. He wasn't his Dirk Gently wasn't exactly in who is reflected in the books, but it was still an interesting show. I think they were doing too much. I'm starting to rant about a show no one's watched.
I'm interested about where to find this other Dirk Gently, though. I would be interested to watch
I'm
it.
Sure
is it just
you find it
YouTube
online
or...
if you Google it? Yeah. Just Dirk Gently, but the first one.
That's what I'll Google. Those will be the words that I Google. I'm glad that you had an opinion on that thing, though. I really thought I was just going to throw... And then you were like, let me tell you why I'm not going to watch it. And I was like,
I will never watch it. No.
Good. Good. I'm glad. Sorry, I like a strong opinion.
Of all of the hot takes I got, it's that.
That's a good hot take. I'll take it. I accept
it. Check out the other one. The other one's... I've never seen the other one. I won't, but... The first one's worth a watch as well, if you're a big Dirk Gently fan.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to ask you, all of this creative work that you do, you have been pretty busy with it, like, since college, huh? As soon as you got out of college, you were performing, doing stand-up, and then doing your comic strip, and then it led you here. Yeah?
Yeah.
So that's been a couple of years. You said you've lived there for 4 years. What do you do when you get writer's block? Like, how do you move yourself? Like, how do you fill the coffers back up? What's your process? Or what are your favorite shows?
It's been many years since college at this point, but I mean, especially in college and after college, I didn't have anything to do but like make stupid stuff, and that was just the way to have fun and like connect with friends. So there was never any shortage of ideas, and also we didn't know what we were doing, so there wasn't any real standards of execution. So it was nothing but making stuff and making stupid stuff and putting it out there. And then as you start to enter it as your career, the standards get higher, and then the process gets a little harder. But luckily at Bears, I can't really afford to have block of any kind because it's my job. But the other great thing I have is coworkers and people who I'm not just the only one. And if we're ever stuck, we have our processes to get ourselves unstuck. But luckily that hasn't happened very often. I think, we've always been good about trying to figure out how to generate ideas in a way that's not draining. But as for my just personal things, it's just you know, waves that I ride when I can, and if I don't have ideas for a while, then I just don't have ideas for a while.
Right.
If that answers the question.
No, I mean, just dealing with it and being cool with the next wave of ideas, that's pretty good. If you can actually maintain that, that's pretty wonderful. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I know people who agonize over it. I'm like, you'll
yeah,
be fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think especially people who depend on having a regular, you know, I used to have a webcomic that I put out regularly, but when I started at Bears, it became a little less frequent, and that pressure to keep stuff out there can really hurt you in a sense that it just becomes this burden, and if you just, you know, do stuff when you're inspired to, then that's going to feel much better than putting all this pressure on yourself. But to oppose myself, putting out things consistently will always help you in the long game anyway. So I don't know what I'm saying right now.
It sounds like if you're going to put stuff out all the time, then you need to adjust your standards of what is good, because what
sure.
you're putting out there is just, it's like stream of consciousness versus versus like something that you've worked on versus a research paper, for instance.
Yeah, I think I know a lot of people who have to, you know, put out a lot of content with a capital C. And the pattern I've always seen is that if they're sick of doing one thing, they just switch to something else. It's just or they, you know, you don't want to make yourself stuck on any one thing.
Is that what the cool kids are saying? Is that the right thing to do, Mikey? Tell me. I'm very uncool. I'd love to be cool.
Oh, I have no idea how to be cool.
I was like, oh, no, I pick a project and stick with it for a while. What do you mean, Mikey?
No, I have no idea what I'm saying. Yeah, you should always stick with stuff, but also don't destroy your life over anything. But also work really hard. But also take care of yourself. But, I think the one thing I can stick to is find what works for you. So if someone wants to, you know, tinker at a novel for many years until it's good enough, and if that works, then that works. But if someone wants to focus their energy on something that they feel might help them better, then that works. The trouble is finding what works, and some people spend more time on that than they do on actually completing anything. But if
have
that
you always
works,
been
that
this
works.
Zen?
No.
It's just all the LAs rubbing off on you.
Yeah, inconsistent pieces of advice that don't really apply. That's all I got.
No, these are. It's very like, hey man, do what works for you. I'm like, this is great.
I know.
I love it.
I mean, that's easier said than done. It's followed by what works for me, and then you're kind of off on your own.
Well. I find that a lot of people feel like they need to do it like somebody else anyway. So
absolutely.
I think it's a valid amount of advice to say, do what works for you, because then it validates each person's process. And it's not like, here's the book. I mean, there's so many of those.
Yeah.
And bless their hearts
I,
for writing them and getting them
I've
published.
Read,
but
I've read a ton of those kinds of books or interviews or podcasts. Especially during college and after, because I was just hoping someone would have that kind of secret advice that would just kind of change everything.
Yeah.
And then what you really learn is everyone had their own thing, and there's no one right way.
Yeah.
Which no one wants to hear. They want to hear that there's a, you know, a secret society that if you tell someone a password, they'll, you know, give you a crystal that makes you talented. And they'll put you on a list of the most talented people in the world, and then that's it.
They put you on a list. That sounds like a great list.
I know, but it doesn't exist.
It doesn't. Oh, man. Those are the best kinds of lists, are the kinds that don't exist.
Right.
Does that rhyme somehow? I'm not really sure.
A little bit.
Oh, it has been a pleasure chatting with you.
Oh, it's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your evening. I'm happy that I was able to talk to you and that you were able to share some gems of your creative process.
Oh, I hope they're more like clods of dirt.
No, but those clods of dirt have seeds in them, and pretty soon they'll be a pretty garden that's all grown.
Wow, you really okay? That's a good turning. The dirt clods have seeds.
Yeah, that's right. I could one up you on positivity all day.
I guess so. Good skill to have.
I'm an improv teacher. Yes, and is my life.
That's right. Oh. That's right.
But hey, it's been super great talking to you, and the stuff that you've has been awesome, and it makes me like extra happy to support your show.
Thank you so much,
because you know, now I know good people are writing it and they care and are trying to put nice messages out, so when I leave him alone in a room and all he's doing is watching your stuff, he's fine. Is what I'm saying. Yes. Your show is now a babysitter. It's official. It's a thing. Don't call CPS on me. I'm making a joke. But thank you so much, Mikey Heller, for being on the podcast. And enjoy your evening, everybody, or day, or whenever you're listening to this. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.